I was never on.
No.
Experience with cars, eh?
Yeah.
Mechanic.
Yeah, I was into it for a deep for a while.
Well, Rick, you saw a good deal today.
You saw and heard. Saw and heard.
When did you get out here?
About 9:30.
Well, you've been here all day.
I was trying to get out early, but I just didn't get away. And I got a headwind all the way. So
headwind.
I had a headwind.
Headwind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me about 20 minutes longer to get here.
How much longer?
About 20 minutes.
Well, it cut you down that much?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's rough. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess so. It's right out of the south, wasn't it?
It's just like all the wind decides, well, we'll not go through the forest. It's too hard. We'll just all go down this 441 here. Oh, no. Boom. And then it's almost always uphill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
On a bicycle. You notice the hills.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I decided what I'd do is I'd look down at the ground and try and imagine I was going downhill. But it didn't get any easier.
It's a little bit far for you to come at.
It's not bad, really.
It's not bad?
1 hour's ride is nothing. I really enjoy it.
Well, you had 3 offers to ride back to town.
He did. Well,
I couldn't hear you, please.
Rick had 3 offers to ride back to town. He turned them all down.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't finished his visit. Who was he at? You didn't want to go off and leave Gorman?
No, I could listen to that man all day.
Isn't that phenomenal?
That man is amazing. Hmm. I could not believe how well he told the joke. It just took me right in.
He puts himself into it.
Mm-hmm. No, I start telling jokes. I know what it's going to do, and I just get to laugh as hard about it. I can never finish it. And people just sit there and look at me, say, what are you laughing about? And I can't tell a joke.
You just can't tell a joke.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was in 8th grade, I had a speech class, and we had to give a humorous speech. And I got the podium. I got... See, I'm laughing now. I got halfway through the first joke and I cracked up. And I fell on the floor laughing. And he flunked me on the speech. He just said, never mind. The class just sat there and looked at me and I couldn't imagine why they weren't laughing. Then I realized I never finished the joke, you know. So bad.
He puts
so
much into it.
Yeah. Well, you know, he does. It just fits right into what he's saying. You know, he doesn't stop and then start to tell a joke. He just keeps right on going. And all of a sudden, it's a joke.
And he says, yeah. He was thought he was telling something, you know, now. And so then all of a sudden, why, it was just a joke. And so amused him.
But he must know just about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And know him well.
Yeah. He does a lot more than just sell him something. He sits down and talk to him.
See, yes. Now that gets, what he sells gets him into the thing.
Uh-huh.
Now that's right, Liz.
That's right.
Yes. I can't tell you though until you read it. That's right. That's right. Now this is part of it. I hadn't thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
He uses that just like a sewing machine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you you've got something to look forward to in that part of the heaven.
I have to get to that.
Faye had a copy, but she let send it off yesterday to...
Well, I can get a hold of one at the bookstore.
You know, they cost $1.95. I thought they cost $95. It's a vintage. It's not the, that American Library.
Aren't there two editions out? I've seen one kind of a white cover and...
Yes, but it's all the same. $1.95. And I called the bookstore, both of them, and that's all they knew about. For that type of book, I thought it was... I thought they had dollar editions of those, like they do of Roughing It.
Hmm. It's probably too popular. Probably too recent. Make some money on it.
Yeah. Now, Jim and Suzanne were here when you came, and we were gone, weren't we?
Yeah. Well, Suzanne was out riding, and I think Jim had gone to pick something up, so I didn't know they were here until he drove out. Said you all had gone out. So I was just walking around, looking. I came back up, and we went out riding on Suzanne, Alden and I went riding back behind the lake.
Rick says he had a car like Clyde's. That's why they were laughing out there. So,
yeah.
And you could talk with him. Yeah. Just knowing.
Well, it just turned you right on. Told me all about it.
You had a car?
I had a 54, his 53. But they're very much alike.
Like what?
It's like his car.
Whose?
Clyde. You know, he took on from
Clyde,
Grandpa. He's very proud of it, yeah. So he's been putting tags on it 14 years and had anything done to it.
Good man.
I said, don't touch it, because if you do, he'll never quit. So I did mine. I started working on it and I ran after it. I remember I used to drive it to school. The school was only 3 blocks away. The only reason I used to drive it, because that's as far as I could take it without it overheating.
Oh,
so I'd drive to school and it'd be overheated by the time I got there, and then it would have about 6 hours to cool off. I could drive it home again. See, and when the engine got hot, you couldn't start it. You know. That poor car.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, Clyde hadn't had that experience then.
No, he's running good.
I noticed him. Racing it a good many times.
Yeah, he's, I think I know what's wrong with this. Because the engine runs nicely, then you put it in gear, it just goes boom. And usually when that happens, it means timing's way off. His mind did the same thing. Oh, it runs so nice. Then you put it in gear, it just wouldn't move. And I was learning to drive then. You get in traffic and you could not go. And people beat their horns and you're shaking because you're nervous and learning how to drive. And you don't know what to do. That was quite a thing. That was a good little car.
Well, you got to talk to Clyde. And now, what was Uncle Gil talking? You heard him a little, didn't you?
Yeah, you were asking him about the garden there. And then he was off to Point the Garden out.
Yeah, that wasn't any good, that part. You didn't hear the first part? He talked about...
Yeah. And then what was he talking
about? Dr. Strange?
No, he wasn't in here.
No,
I didn't see me. I only saw him out there at the table there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now that first part, that was some of the richest... I'd play it for you.
We were trying to talk to Grandpappy, but I guess he wasn't feeling too well.
He can't talk anymore.
Yeah. But I was trying to get him to talk about Napoleon.
He can't talk.
And he just did not know who Napoleon was.
Mine and just, yeah.
I didn't know he's that bad.
But now Miss Betsy, oh, Rick came in when Betsy was here.
Yeah.
I was talking to her about Napoleon. I didn't know she owned Napoleon. That's really something to have a goose. You just don't see people have a goose.
Yeah.
Especially named Napoleon.
Well, a guy named him, didn't he? You all named him. He was yours.
Well.
He talks to you. And who's that car?
Betsy says he's the best watch. He's better than a watchdog.
Yeah. The noisy. I'll let you know when something's coming. I got quite a history of being. Was it Rome was saved by the geese or something like that? Somewhere along there, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
Well, there were lots of different people.
Well, I don't see how, on Saturday like this, you don't have that many. You can kind of hang on a little bit to what's going on, but you get 23, 4 people out here on Sunday.
No, I don't try to. Now, this is unusual of these particular people, really. And the thing of it is, I get in touch with them, but I never know who's going to show up. And I have no way of making appointments, see? There's nothing to justify. And if I tried to, it wouldn't work. So I talked to Gorman this morning, but I had no idea he'd ever show up. Did I ever get out here, you see? Not just today, but any time. Clyde's never been out here, you see.
The most amazing fellow. Gorman's the kind of guy that can drive a Cadillac and not drive it because it's Cadillac. He knows it's comfortable, he's on the road a lot, and he's a good solid car, so a Cadillac, but it's not a Cadillac for him. It's just something to get him where he wants to go. It's kind of got control of that car.
He drives it for the one day. He don't have much to drive. Oh, he is, I guess, is on board.
And he tries to, as if he trades with Cookie just as much as he can.
Mm-hmm.
At night.
Yeah, at night.
Otherwise, old Cookie.
You know what amazed me about it? He's talking about a shirt, you know, had little holes burned in it. And I just really enjoyed seeing those holes. You know, driving Cadillac, man. Have holes burned your shirt. That's the only way to go. Yeah.
His poker was it? Oh, yeah. Just worn.
Yeah.
You know, it's a plastic stuff, and you touch it and it burns a hole in it.
Yeah,
oh,
just melts like that.
Oh, yeah.
I remember I was ironing a pair of pants one time, they perm pressed. I didn't know I was ironing away.
Hey.
I look at my iron, there's my pants on the iron.
It
was just melting away on the iron. Oh no.
That's right.
It's all in plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
you sure have to be careful about
that.
One way
to learn. Yeah.
Hey, do you think Rick, the people like Rick, would ever get into it and know these people if they had access to it?
I think he would if he had access and once saw what he could do.
Yeah.
One of the most exciting things Rick could see would be to see how you held open for Miss Daisy. We're too tired tonight to do it. But he ought to hear that because you could, maybe Rick could see.
Well, when I told him this morning he ought to look at me, I didn't mean to sit there and look at me. I meant just watch how you hold these things open. Don't go against them. Don't close them up.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's what I was trying to see, huh?
Yeah.
Because when you left, see, I was trying to get her to talk about Napoleon.
Yeah.
But she would just kind of smile and giggle and say, yeah. And then
well,
she
she's
just,
tired.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I figured she didn't know me either. So she wouldn't be too prone to talk.
Yeah. And you're a little quick in your speech for
her. Yeah, I need to.
Very well. Well, I've watched a guy do it time and time and time again. Of course, he's worked at it, and I can't do it anything like he can do it, but I can appreciate the way he can hold an object. OE objects that bring from diffusion, you know, and I saw that so beautifully the other morning when he was in the stage.
Yeah.
It's no use to talk about it because you simply have to just see
it.
Oh,
you have to see it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you'd have to hear the tape.
He would just make generalities if he hadn't just kept holding this table in front of her, and then she just...
yeah, I'll tell you what it was. Faye brought her up down to the end of the lane, one of those plums, wild plums wasn't blooming. Faye says, that's curious, isn't it? Somehow that, why, Mrs. Miles, the sun don't hit. They said, well, Miss Ada, how do you know? And she says, well, I watch it. And that's the old world. They learn through watching and observing. And they really did. So Faye kept us alive and started off the visit. And it goes all through the tape. At one point, she was watching. She was over this. And the boys were eating, and they'd go in the kitchen and fill up the plate and go off somewhere and eat it, then sit down. She said she just sat there and watched them. So I took the cue from a lot of these people, Faulkner for one thing. That Faulkner doesn't know what he's talking about, which generation.
Mm-hmm.
See, he's heard so much talk, especially in something like the bear, that's so concentrated. And I said to him, now while you watch these boys do that, you can see your own kitchen and sitting there. Now, this is what would happen. She's going to generalize and pass it off with a statement on the, yes, they was quiet then and eat what I give them. That's the way she'd pointed out. She would have taken it off. Or she wasn't interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow it just came to me. Well, like Whitman, you see. We up here are conditioned statements. Well, Whitman got away from statements and it's objects that bring from diffusion my sort. And I said to her, that kitchen, that table that you eat on. And she picked it right up. That table did it. And I said, a little later, much later, she got off on some interesting business. I said, now, you watch Doris's boys go in there. Think about it, just watch them, sit down and watch them. And you can see your own table, and you can see your mama's table, where you brought up.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Now,
yeah.
All I was doing, you see, was picking up that generation.
Yeah,
and you know what she did? She sort of shook like a dog. She sort of shuddered just a minute. It was a little too much for her. Until I said that, Your kitchen was right by the stove, and she picked it right up. She says, no, that was before stoves. My mama cooked in the fireplace. And she went right along with it in the most beautiful way. And all I had to do was just...
She cooked a meal for us.
Yeah,
right
she
here.
Cooked a meal.
Miss Daisy cooked a meal.
Without any prodding, by pushing on my part.
In that fireplace.
That's three generations.
It's beautiful.
Now, she can't do it by herself. And that's why I say that young people, Faye used to think they could do, I mean, she used to say if anybody was in mind to do something, they'd be able to do it, but they can't. Now, the odds are against them too much. The odds are too great. Like Faye's niece, she has had all this exposure, and she's right, perceptive, gifted. But there was no one close by that could keep her straight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somebody, for a long time, you see, there has to be somebody there with that critical, I use this word sometimes, that critical superstructure. Like those three generations. And as you see, I've worked in it till I've picked up so much, that's the type of thing that she would need, you know. I can tell when she's on the track. And she's not, she can always test it on me. She can't test it on her roommate, on people who don't know the responses so all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's right. Now, but and it would work, and I could develop people like Ms. Rawlins, except now you don't have them anymore, Ms. Rawlins. You see, everybody's got to get a degree.
Yeah.
And there is no way to compete with it. Now, you see, Faulkner, in that little book there, I'll read you that. He was about out of high school.
It's the, of course, you know better than anybody, it's the precious.
He made no particular impression upon either neighbors or teachers. He left high school without graduating.
Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
That's people to watch.
Now, he seems at first to have done little but wander about and read without much sense of purpose or direction. But in 1914 began his friendship with Phil Stone, who already had degrees from the University of Mississippi and from Yale. He is 4 years his senior, and he told him what to read. He talked with him about literature and the South. But there are no more Phil Stones. The Phil Stones can't compete, you see, with the degrees. And that's the end.
That's the end of them. Well, I don't know.
Time you get a degree, you see, you got nothing. If you know how to write, you got nothing to write about.
Well, I kind of think you can get a little bigger than the degree. It's hard. The BA, I'm really fighting it. And it's not mine. I gave up getting it for me a long time ago. I knew after last summer, I knew education was about over now. I'm just doing some formalities here. Get a little credential to take me places. That's the trouble. You have to have a little credential. But I run into people now that are bigger than I am. I knew a guy working at a gas station who, he had a merit scholarship for it. He made it. He qualified for it. He turned it down and went to work in a gas station. He's the most fantastic mechanic I've ever run into. And, he got bigger than him. That's,
Well, you see what it is. I never knew exactly what happened. I went to school as little as I could. I practiced stars, and I had to go back to school from time to time. I knew better. But I never had quite the gift. And I never had the critical superstructure. I made tremendous errors. And you've heard me talk about some of them. One is, I was exposed to that conventional type of literature, instruction literature, of the world classics, especially in translation, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all the, my perceptions in it were wrong and fit nothing. I just was perceptive and took around perceptions that were no use to me.
Well,
I can see it now. There's no doubt in my mind about that. I mean, it ain't even worth discussing. It's perfectly clear. I had even tested it. They had the Turgenev for somebody who wrote Fathers and Sons. That in translation, of course, and in translating, the English didn't make sense. It wasn't English. There was absolutely no feel for the language. Absolutely no feel for the language. Language people don't know English.
You know?
That's right.
You know, when I was looking on the paper today, I saw that.
Yeah.
She was writing in Finnish using English words.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I told her, I said, you know that's what you're doing? She says, yeah. I said, well, I really admire you for trying. yeah, you could just, they would just show up. Now, that's what really fascinates me. But, we got a language now if we just learn how to use it. And we got words mean practically anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you just learn how to use them.
No. And Faulkner had a gift, of course. All those gifts. But, you know, I have seen more in the bear this time than I ever did before. I don't know. My mind just takes in so much at a time, so little at a time. And it's just almost overwhelming how it changes the picture. Faulkner and the whole business of literature, and it's in it. It's very clear. There's no doubt in it. I mean, it's not a hypothetical thing. It's clear. And one reason I could do it is I had the article by Utley to go on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've gone farther than Utley. Now, I think I see more clearly some of the things he put into his paper with the help, you see, of some of those youngsters there. They don't understand it themselves, but they help me understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they have sort of a limited.
Yeah.
You just can't get it all in one.
Well, they'll focus on points for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is nice, because trying to get hold of it, you know, they'll start picking out pieces of it.
That's right, getting a hold of it.
Which is giving a new perspective. Yeah. You know, what it reminds me of is something a friend of mine told me. This is the way you look at things. She's once teaching at Key West, said they had these boards, had them out, had class out, with little viewfinders, like you use on a movie camera. And she was saying, I want you to look at this and pretend like you're filming it and tell me what you see. And so his boy's looking at the fence post. He says, "Miss Collins, the post down there is smaller than this one here." He says, "No, it's not." So he says, "Well, now, yes, it is, because I can see that." So he goes down there, and he measures that fence post. He comes back and measures the other one. He says, "No, they're the same size." You know, and he was just beginning to realize that how to see it, you know. And this is the beginning of perspective, a realization of perspective. And she said, "It's the most fantastic thing to see." So watch these people suddenly realize what's going on. And what tickles me is she doesn't have a degree. And she has taught these kids far more than any of the teachers there. She is just...
She won't go along with
them?
Oh,
no.
She's already.
She'd just walk up and authorities. They were trying to get some kind of program going. And he said, "I don't think the program's any good. I'm not going to do it." And I walked out. And she, this is so funny. She was talking to some administrator coordinator, and the coordinator was saying, "Well, I've been principal this, administrator this. I've been here, I've been there, blah, blah." And Mari said, Yes, I suppose we all get pushed to our own levels of incompetence." He said she never understood what she said. But that's what someone you realize me.
Yeah. I like to hear you talk about.
She's character.
Well, you'll just have to read the Hamlet, first part of it at least, the way of.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, it just it's right out here.
He finishes this next time.
Then I can start studying.
Let me tell you, maybe if Nick comes out, we can get a little something going for a week or two.
Wouldn't that be fun this summer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I haven't let Nick report enough. He's had he's seen a whole lot. He's awful quiet, you know. He's not pushy, you know, Nick. Mm-hmm.
I haven't met him. I've heard you talk a lot about him, but I haven't met him yet. Because when he's here, I haven't met him.
He's helped me get in hay. If it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't have had hay the last 2 years. And he's a ham radio man. And he's kept my equipment going when I couldn't get it done down there. I broke down several times, and I'd be out of commission until he'd come in and got me patched up again. So, but now he's reported this last time he had a bonus report. He did. You see, he can talk about a car just like you do. He got a fine feel for him. And horses. And he's used horses to get, you know, that's the thing. He's used, finally, he used to squabble around here about western or eastern Santa Rosa. We finally got headed in that other direction with the riding, and the horses get you into the countryside. And see, he's taken up cookies. He knows as much about cookies as I do. And a lot more in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
He's even found some cookies up there.
That's right. Yes. And he's gone all over that countryside up there. Now, I don't know just what his categories are. You know, at that stage he wouldn't. Might be surprised. One of them was that people, you see, like Cookie, talk about taking care of horses, but they don't take care of them. There's a great deal of difference between their doctrine and their practice. And Nick pursued that. He went into it. And it's right informative. Oh, yes. And that would be nice. Now, he could use that a lot of ways.
One of the interesting things about Nick too. When he comes out here, he's the only, I think about the only person we have who comes out here who knows completely how to dress for the country. He covers up winter and summer.
Yeah.
You don't find him stepping in ant hills and things like that.
Yeah.
He just, yeah. he wears his country cover up clothes as if they belong to him. And he's from a wealthy family, and went to a very swanky private school in Virginia, and he knows that side of it too. You know, he can wear a lavender tuxedo with his grater and a ruffle front with his grater. Style is the best of him, and you see, so he's not torn about what the other side of the world like.
Yeah.
You know, Now I've seen that, and people come out and visit you, and they can't move around because it gets cold.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, it was like Alma was out here today. She had silver heeled shoes. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, if you give her a pair of tennis shoes, I think she could have gotten a lot better. You know?
Well, probably my best friend town, who was brought up on a farm in Pennsylvania, has never been out here with any walking shoes on.
That's why I wear these. That's the why you can just walk in the water.
If she does, it's an accident, isn't it?
Yeah. I think so.
That's something that people get so involved with. They can't go any further than what they got on. If the clothes don't move, they can't either.
They can't move either. That's right.
Yeah.
Take your time and enjoy.
Yeah.
Take